From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made with a surprising announcement. Foodie Culture has been officially canceled. The Atlantic Monthly performed the cancellation with a headline that reads, "Foodie Culture as We Know It is Over." Author Hannah Georges writes, quote, "A wave of culinary experts is responding to the pandemic with an accessible and empathetic approach to home cooking, and audiences can't get enough," end quote. Georges writes that food media tends to be elitist, not democratic. She writes that foodie culture is snobbish, and a pandemic is no time for snobbery. She goes on to say, quote, "Rather than treating cooking as an inscrutable science understood only by the upper echelons of the culinary world, chefs now foster direct connections with their audiences. Their shows don't require costly, rare ingredients because they understand the needs of the average people who turn to them. When trips to the grocery store can be dangerous, creative combinations of existing foods are paramount," end quote. And I will show my bias here. I agree that food culture can occasionally be elitist, and I can't stand it when it goes in that direction. But I'd be just fine if we just got rid of the word foodie forever. The notion, though, of food-loving culture does not have to be snobbish. Appreciating high-quality things, it can be music, art, cars, trucks, food, whatever. That's part of what makes life great. And pursuing our own skills in the kitchen is not inherently snobbish. Maybe this writer has a point, though. We've brought in four chefs for this hour. They'll debate the themes in this article, and they'll have their own ideas for what we might be able to cook at home during quarantine. Welcome to Andrew Bush, head chef at Union Tavern in Rochester. I think Rochester. I don't know if it's actually Irondequoit. It's probably both. Andrew, welcome. How are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Good. Are you in Rochester or Irondequoit, technically?
It's Irondequoit, technically.
It is Irondequoit. Okay, very good. In Rochester, I'm pretty sure Candace Dole is the executive chef for Owl House Catering. Is that Rochester?
It is Rochester, yeah.
Okay, and I'm told that you're also the soup queen. We're going to talk a little soup this hour.
Sounds good to me.
Sean Wolf, the executive chef at Big Tree Inn in Geneseo, and they have big plans for the future there. Sean, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. And Scott Riesenberger, executive chef at the Lake House in Canandaigua. Scott, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon. Thank you.
Good afternoon. The Lake House is going to be a thing in Canandaigua at some time. Do we know when, Scott?
We are slating to open the first part of the property this summer.
Okay.
So construction is underway. I actually just left the property about 15 minutes ago.
Well, I know, you know, everyone's sort of trying to figure it out as we go, but plans still on for the Lake House opening this summer in Canandaigua. I'll ask all four of you. I'll start with you, Andrew. The Atlantic says this is the end of foodie culture as we know it. Do you agree?
No. I feel like this is the time that when chefs can rise up even more to help with the families that are in need, to have that homey feeling, but still get that nice upscale value that restaurants give them. I feel like this is a great time for us to really grow as chefs, as well as our consumers, our families, our friends.
I think that's a great point. Candace, is this the end of foodie culture?
I don't think it's necessarily the end of foodie culture. I think there's a lot of experts, maybe not with a ton of credentials in pretty much any area you look. But I think people might be a little bit more empathetic towards restaurants and chefs and the hard work that goes into them after this and might take that into consideration. You know, when they're critiquing or talking about restaurants.
That's very interesting to me, Candace. It's almost a parallel to the extra appreciation that parents now have for teachers, right? You go, wow, you guys are underpaid. Wow, this is a lot harder than I thought. We're going to feel the same way about chefs, you think. I love that. I like that idea.
I think, hope so, yeah.
Sean Wolf, foodie culture, dead, yes, no?
Well, I share your distaste for the term foodie.
Yeah, I don't like it.
But I mean, I don't think as a culture it's dead. I think that there will always be a place for truffles and caviar, not on every table. But I also don't think that the change that we're kind of seeing with home cooking to be really a new thing.
Well, we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Scott Riesenberger, what would you say about this culture, foodie culture or not? Is it dead?
I mean, I think the foodie culture and the term has been evolving for the last few years anyway. I think people with the, you know, exposure of YouTube, and you can really learn or watch any product being prepared. There's sous vide cooking techniques, all kinds of things on online these days. I think there's more resources for the general population to adopt and to be more aware of. So the foodie term, I think, used to mean something more of an elitist type of thing. And I think now foodie, which I don't like that term either, but I think it's going to mean just more knowledge, more exposure. You know, it's maybe getting to the roots of what food is, and the meaning behind getting people together at the table is what we're going to take out of this.
Well, so. And so let me ask all of you, you know, sort of what comes to mind when you hear that term foodie, and also if you think it's elitist. And I will ask our listening audience, I would love to know what listeners are cooking most often at home. Have you figured something out that you couldn't do before? Are you taking any sort of online classes or watching shows? Are you practicing? Is there a go-to that you have that you think, I can't believe everybody doesn't do this? I would love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org, and we can be a food hub this hour of ideas for each other, because most of us are doing most of our cooking at home, though some of us are ordering takeout from these amazing chefs who are working here today. So Scott, when you hear the word foodie now, and I guess forget the pandemic, just generally speaking, what comes to mind first, and is it snobbish? Because I can understand the disdain for snobbery. I don't necessarily think it means inherently snobbish, but what do you think, Scott?
I mean, I think foodie, you know, to me what it means now is somebody that is more likely to go on and write a review on Yelp or TripAdvisor or some kind of blog that, you know, can be detrimental or encouraging to a business's success. But, you know, foodie, you know, say 10 years ago meant somebody that might be exposed to, you know, esoteric and exotic ingredients and luxury ingredients. This day and age, I mean, you can buy caviar and truffles at Wegmans, and some of the price points are, they're not out of this world. I think foodie now to me is somehow has a negative connotation in my head when it's used to talk about somebody. It sounds almost a little amateur. I feel like
interesting.
It's a term that's kind of like, really, you're still talking about a foodie as a term, but you know, it's something that's been created, and I think it's evolving now, especially with restaurants facing, you know, if they can reopen or not, and people maybe having a new appreciation for supporting your local restaurant, mm-hmm. supporting these businesses and the staff and the hard, you know, the hard effort that goes into, you know, maintaining them for the public. So,
yeah, and I want to get Sean, Candace, and Andrew on that. But before we do, we got a caller who can't stay long and just wants to jump in. So I'll grab John in Geneva. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. I appreciate what you guys do. I've been listening for a long time. I just wanted to say that this pandemic has actually excited my foodie nature. I'm exploring a lot of things that I see online, and I'm trying them at home, and I can't wait to see what they're actually what the experience will be like when it's prepared by someone who knows what they're doing. So I'm ready to get back into visiting some of you guys' places.
What are you making at home? What has excited you the most, John?
Well, I got Aaron Franklin's with the barbecue place out in Austin, Texas. I built a smoker. So that's what I did first. I did that, and I'm going further and further and further with exploring mac and cheeses and all those types of things. So, you know, that's kind of where I am right now. But, yeah, open to all kinds of things.
Is there anything that cannot be smoked, John?
No. No, butter can be smoked. Everything can be smoked. I did some salsa the other day. Amazing.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Thanks for the phone call, John, and good luck on your pursuits there. That's really cool to hear. And so for him, this has just been a chance to kind of explore that more, to smoke him if you got him, with anything you got there with your smoker. Sean Wolf, what comes to mind when you hear foodie, and is it something elitist or snobbish?
I don't think that it necessarily has to be. I mean, for me, as a generic term, I just think of somebody that devotes maybe a little more of their consciousness to thinking about food. I think for some people, food is just kind of fuel. And I think maybe someone that considers themselves a foodie thinks of food beyond maybe a Swanson TV dinner.
Where do you think this idea, Sean, comes in, that the writer from The Atlantic has, that it means something inherently snobbish or elitist?
I think that she has a personal issue with the term foodie and food culture. She really seemed to be attacking it. And there wasn't a lot of support for her argument, I thought. She pretty much was just saying, well, during the pandemic, there's a lot of shows about people cooking at home. And so foodies are done.
Okay. Candace Dole, what do you hear when you hear foodie?
I think formerly I would have, my mind would go to somebody who doesn't necessarily work in food service, but has immersed themselves in eating lots of different types of food, and enjoys doing that. I think maybe the connotation of snobbery or being elitist that might come along with being a foodie is that these people have the means to do that. Not everybody can go to restaurants 5 days a week or however many days a week. That might be excessive. And write about it or have the time to do those things. So maybe that's where the kind of snobbery attached to foodie might have come from. But now, given this pandemic and the state of the world we're living in, I think foodie has a little bit more of a positive vibe. I think people are starting to get more excited about cooking for themselves. And I don't necessarily think it has to be a negative word.
Okay. Andrew Bush, what about you?
I agree. I feel like back in the day, foodie was a negative term that everybody didn't want to hear. You know, went out a lot at restaurants. You know, maybe be a fine dining, a casual, or upscale. But now it's a good thing. You know, you're seeing the world how we're seeing it through our eyes, the different types of techniques that we're doing at home, eating, different types of flavor profiles. I think it's a great thing that everybody's expanding their knowledge during this time because, you know, like I said, teachers are working hard to help the kids. You know, I think it's all around good term now than before it was. A bad term.
All right, so we've got Andrew Bush, Candace Dole, Sean Wolf, and Scott Riesenberger, chefs at the Union Tavern, the Owl House, Owl House Catering, Big Tree Inn in Geneseo, and the Lake House in Canandaigua. And we're talking about this idea that we are seeing a change in what the public wants in terms of how the public learns how to cook. And the Atlantic Monthly not only said that foodie culture is dead, but they said during the pandemic, people can't go to the grocery store very often or don't want to or want to sort of be limited in their times out in the public. So therefore, we need what is likely in-house, simple but creative, nothing overly fancy or esoteric or exotic. And the Atlantic's sort of conclusion is we should learn from this, and that's what food culture should be going forward, whether it's food magazines, food shows, cooking demonstrations. You know, Andrew, if you're teaching somebody how to cook, where do you usually start? I just don't think it's a whole lot of overly esoteric. I think that element exists out there, but I think most people learn how to do basics. They learn some knife skills. They learn how to cook some basics. Where would you start if you're teaching somebody, Andrew?
I teach them. First thing I ask them, what's the favorite recipe that they want to know? You know, mm-hmm. What's their favorite burger they've had or they want to try and teach? I go from there because if they want to make something that they love to eat in general or their favorite recipe, we go start from there, you know what I mean? Because that's where the fun really begins, making something that you have had before in your own way. And then we go from a little bit of knife skills, cooking techniques, sauteing, and then we put everything together to make their final product. I feel like making your own food from scratch, from something that you had before in a restaurant, is the greatest feeling in the world, because it means you're learning, you're grasping things, you're growing as a human being.
Candace Dole, what about you?
I usually start with a good spice rack. If somebody's asking me for, my opinion on cooking, I ask them what they have in their spice rack, and we start there. Just encourage them to get some basic spices, and don't be afraid to really season your food and make it taste great.
So you're an elitist. Okay. I see. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
A salt and pepper and some cumin and coriander chili powder makes me an elitist.
I agree. I agree. I think the whole premise was silly, but it was a great excuse to get great chefs on the show to talk. do we misuse spices most often, Candace, or are we prone to misusing spices?
I think you can under-season or over-season, and there is probably a fine line between those two things. But I just encourage people to not be afraid of trying different spices and trying out different flavors. If you make a mistake, fine, but go for it. And there are, there's just a wealth of amazing recipes online. You can really just Google anything, and somebody will probably give you some insight as to how much to use or how to use something.
All right, Sean Wolf, where do you start?
It's such a wide world of cooking, it could be anything. But the simplest piece of advice and the place to start is with salt. I can pretty much guarantee that everybody is underutilizing salt. Anything that I make, almost I add salt throughout the process, and not necessarily just table salt or kosher salt. I may add something that's salty. Parmesan cheese is a good example, but you got to have your salt in there.
Why do you think people are underusing?
I think people are afraid of making their food salty, for one thing. And I think salt has kind of gotten a bad rap over the years due to its connection with blood pressure.
Yeah, I can see that. But you're also making the point that you're doing it as you go. Do you think maybe the lay public waits to the end of the dish and says, okay, then grab the salt shaker and hit it with salt and then serve it, as opposed to working with it throughout the process?
I think a lot of people do that. I know that in my restaurants, a lot of people are offended that we don't have salt and pepper at the table. But too many times, people just, as a reflex, start putting salt and pepper on their food, and we've already salted it. So now the food is salty.
Sean, you just took me back to my own high school graduating days. One of the things my dad said, he said, I'm going to give you sort of a goofy lesson, but he said, think about this. If you're ever at dinner with someone and you're trying to impress them, do not just grab the salt shaker and hit your food with it before you taste it, because that will show that you make rash judgments without really knowing what you're talking about. I said, that's a bit of a leap, isn't it, Dad? And he said, well, think about it. Somebody just spent a lot of time working to create something for you, and you don't even want to check it out? You want to make an assumption about it first? So I've always remembered that. I wonder if that would be sort of a Sean Wolf piece of advice, too. That maybe it wouldn't be, because you don't even put salt shakers on your table.
Yeah, and sometimes people are very angry about that, Adam.
Do you tell them that you work very hard to get the right balance here, and that that there's a reason that you don't put it out there, or do you relent and bring them a salt shaker?
We have salt shakers for people that want to add more salt or pepper, but yeah, I certainly encourage them to taste it first.
Okay. Scott Riesenberger, where do you start if you're working with home chefs?
Well, yeah, again, I mean, everybody's different, but to me, it's really, it's about organization. Cooking can be very intimidating to a lot of people, especially if you don't do it on a daily or weekly basis. And if you're trying, a new recipe or baking, for instance, that might be out of your comfort zone. So I think if you can organize yourself, organize not only your thoughts, your steps, your environment, it's going to help you reach, or at least get you closer to the goal. that you're aiming for. So,
all right. Well, let me work in some listener feedback, and before I get to some of your emails, let me get Phyllis in Rochester on the phone. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi.
Thank you
for doing this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to remark on the fact about foodies and the connotation of the word foodie. So I consider myself a foodie. I am not a trained chef or anything like that. I'm old school cooking, cook at home, no recipe, you know, kind of stuff. And I consider myself a foodie because I absolutely love food, and I love all kinds of foods, and I'm willing to try just about anything. I don't know too many things that I wouldn't try at least one time. And I don't have a lot of money to go to big name restaurants or whatever, but I love trying. When I go to a restaurant, I try to order something different all the time so that I can see what it tastes like, the textures. I consider myself a foodie. I used to look at cooking shows, and I'm really not really taken by the big chef's cooking shows. I really like the kind of geo stuff at home, recipes that we are easier to do or that I can adjust. So I get recipes and I adjust them. I don't know any recipe that I follow fully just from the recipe that's given by the chef, because I don't cook the way chefs do. Chefs set up their kitchens, and I don't do all that. I have recipes, I have ingredients, and then I taste it and I make it my own. And I think that's what being a foodie is about. And I love it when we have chefs. I've gone to some cooking classes, and we don't start off with anything, how we set up our kitchen, anything. We just start off with something really basic, and I really learn each time I would go to a cooking class with something basic how much I could do and add and separate and mix and all of that. So just making it really simple starts off and gives people power to be able to be creative with what they have.
Do you have a go-to during quarantine that you're making most often, Phyllis?
Do you know what I'm making? I am making feel-good food like soups and stews and things that my mother used to say, put, you know, stick to your ribs kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really seeking comfort food. And that's unusually. I haven't done that recently because I don't cook that often anymore. But I really am seeking comfort food.
Well, I'm thrilled you called, because this opens up the door to talk about some go-tos, and some of our listeners have been sharing theirs. If you have shared yours via email, I'll try to read some ideas here, because we're all looking for ideas. Thank you, Phyllis. Thanks for the phone
call.
All right. And let me ask our guest to kind of weigh in, and maybe this is not the place that you guys can really take us with this, because your job is you know, you're these head and executive chefs at these wonderful establishments. I don't know if when you're home, you just pop in a frozen pizza, or if you cook at home. Andrew Bush, do you cook at home?
Yeah, every day.
Oh, okay. So, all right, that's great. So do you have a go-to, let me put it this way here. Do you have a go-to, or do you have something that you can share with listeners that they could make at home?
Lately I've been in a Chinese fix. So I've been making pork fried rice. Pretty much every couple of days, and it's easy. It's simple. You know, I mean, it just takes some onions and carrots, maybe some old pork loin that you had the day before from dinner. You know, and just mix together with some teriyaki, some soy sauce seasoning, and a little scrambled eggs. And then, you know, it's a simple recipe that, you know, kids can do at home, that they can do by themselves. You can do on the side as a main dish. But it's a feel good. It's a feel good meal that you can get by, and then get your Chinese fix if you need it.
All right, so make sure that we got the order of operations down. What's in the pan first? Is it a little mirepoix or something? What's in there first?
It's little onions, some carrots, some oil, saute it up a little bit. Then you want to add in your pork, either pork shoulder, pork loin, some fatty pork. Saute it up about a couple minutes. As it fully cooks, add in about 2 cups of rice, and then some soy sauce and teriyaki. Salt and mix it all up, incorporate everything together, and then you're gonna make like a little volcano in the middle. You add in 2 eggs, scramble those up in the middle so that they get nice and fluffy, they don't turn black from the teriyaki, and then mix it all together, season it, salt, pepper, and then finish it with a little bit of scallions on top, and then you have a simple dish that probably takes you about 10 minutes too.
That's Okay, we are signed up for that. And is that on the menu?
Yeah, you made me hungry.
Is that on the menu for you, Andrew, or is that just one that you like to do at home?
It actually is. It used to be during the summer last year. We did this a couple times at the tavern. I love to use a little bit of Asian flair at our tavern a little bit almost every monthly, so that people can have different types of food in the city, just the normal here and there.
Sure. And what are you guys doing at the tavern during the pandemic? Are you doing takeout?
Actually, we're switching it up. We're thinking about doing like the box prepared meals with our recipes, so that people can have our dishes in their own home with the recipes, maybe some, you know, how to bake cookies for the kids. And then as well as we do, you know, fish fries on Fridays. It's pretty much a staple of the city. But, yeah.
All right, Candace Dole, do you have a go-to that you want to share that you think people can do on their own?
Yeah, as a soup queen, I've brought a soup recipe, and I think anybody can make this at home. I'm calling this my easy asparagus soup because asparagus is in season right now, and it's the best this time of year. But basically, just melt some butter, throw in one large Vidalia onion, rough chop a carrot, 3 cloves of garlic, and a tablespoon of picked and chopped fresh thyme. Let that caramelize down. Season it with some kosher salt, some freshly cracked black pepper, and a little bit of white pepper. You're going to caramelize the onions and carrots and all those ingredients for about 5 to 10 minutes. Then you can just throw in about 2.5 cups, which is about the size of like a average grocery store bunch of asparagus, chopped up with the woody stems removed. Cook over medium heat for 5 minutes. I'm giving you this whole recipe, but I do have this available on my Instagram, too, if anybody actually wants this recipe. I use all of the vegetable scraps, and I make stocks as I go, so I don't have to use store-bought stock. Mm. So basically, I take the onion peels, the carrot peels, the thyme stick, I throw bay leaf in it, and I boil that while everything is caramelizing. And then I just take a fine mesh strainer, I pour the stock over the soup ingredients, I let them come to a boil for about 5 minutes, and then I puree it, and voila. To finish it, I throw in 4 tablespoons of Romano cheese, grated Romano cheese, and serve it up. And it's delicious.
How long start to finish?
That one's really simple, and it takes about 25 minutes start to finish.
That's great.
It doesn't need to be super overcooked. Actually, you don't want to overcook the asparagus in this one because you get that nice bright green color when the asparagus is only essentially softened and been blanched in the soup. Mm-hmm. So when you puree it, you still have that really nice color.
I was told by a chef once that it is a crime to overcook asparagus and to overcook salmon or fish. I wonder. Go ahead, Candace.
Sure. I guess some people... I don't like mushy vegetables. Challenge yourself to try to cook, you know, during this time, cook some vegetables in different techniques. You know, you don't always just have to blanch or boil your vegetables. There's lots of different ways to prepare them. And I like a little crunch and a little life left in my vegetables. So, yeah.
Candace, where are you on Instagram?
Soup Queen.
Soup Queen on Instagram. The recipe is there. And you're the executive chef for Owl House Catering. What are you guys doing during the pandemic?
Well, it's kind of like catering at this point. You know, we had a full summer booked for weddings and events, and pretty much everything has been canceled. So we are working diligently right now to get everything rescheduled. But as, you know, for the foreseeable future, the restaurant and the catering company are closed until we can move past the apex of this virus.
Okay. Sean Wolf, executive chef at Big Tree Inn in Geneseo. You got something you want to share?
Yeah, I very infrequently cook at home. It's about the last thing that I want to do when I get home from work. Really more because I don't like cleaning up afterwards. But one thing that people... I think are a little scared to make is macaroni and cheese. And it's Kraft macaroni and cheese is delicious, but making macaroni and cheese for yourself kind of from scratch doesn't really take much more time. And it's one of the great things about it is you can go in so many directions with it. You just cook some pasta and some salted water and you can really use any shape. And then put some cream on the stove and get it hot and slowly stir in shredded cheese. And you can use any kind of cheese. There's a lot of recipes that use roux, and you don't need it. You can just really melt the cheese in the butter and toss the pasta in it. And you can throw bacon in there, pepperoni, vegetables, whatever you want. I mean, it's 10 minutes at most to make.
And perfect for, let's say, I don't know, a Friday or a Saturday in May 2020 when we could have a record snowstorm, a little comfort food, and a ridiculous right? snowstorm, which is just salt in the pandemic wound. So there you go. Yeah, I love that. It shouldn't take very long, as you said, either. How long to really get the cheese and the cream where you want it for the pasta, Sean?
It depends on the volume that you're making. So the best thing to do is get your cream so that it's hot, not boiling, but pretty hot. And then, you know, mix maybe a half a cup of your cheese in there. Stir it until that's all melted. Check the consistency of it, and then throw another half a cup in there. And it'll thicken up nice. It'll get too thick in a hurry. You need to watch it. But if you're just making a single portion, it'll probably take 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you're making enough for six people, it might take 8 minutes.
Yeah, not bad. All right. And what's going on at the Big Tree Inn in Geneseo? Because I'd like to know what's going on now, but also there's some big plans for the future there.
Yeah. So what we're doing now is we have a small takeout menu that's available on the website, bigtreeinn.com. And it's foods that are mostly designed to travel. So there's not macaroni and cheese on it because I don't feel that travels super well. But we're looking at kind of re-identifying. The Big Tree Inn has been open since 1833 or something absurd. We're trying to refresh it. We're going to be rolling out, when we reopen, a new pub menu. So tavern-inspired foods that I'm sure the author of the article will like because they're, you know, accessible. And then at dinner time, we'll have a little more upscale dinners, because I think that people are going to be looking for that escape. I mean, people have been cooped up in their homes. I think that when they're allowed to come out, they're going to hit hard, and they're going to be hitting for things that they can't make at home, things that they've been missing.
Awesome. Scott Riesenberger, executive chef at the forthcoming Lake House in Canandaigua. What can people do at home that's accessible?
Yeah, well, first to touch on chefs cooking at home, I rarely cook at home. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty scary, some of the things that I keep stocked in my freezer as a go-to. frozen Indian meals from Trader Joe's seems to be a regular occurrence. Again, I don't mind the cleanup. It's more of the process. I'm happy to cook for one other person, but just for myself, it's for some reason it's not worth it. It's a very strange kind of dynamic. My kids, on the other hand, are very finicky. So, like, I'm a short order cook, creating, you know, three different meals for both my daughters and myself daily, which can be a challenge. But for me, cooking at home, you know, I think this time of year, obviously, we don't have, you know, the accessibility of fitness centers, and the weather is all over the place, so we can't do some of these activities outside. So trying to keep somewhat of a healthy lifestyle waistline can be a challenge when you're home all day. So a nice salad, especially this time of year, there's all kinds of things coming into season. Spring, you know, is technically here, but you'd never know it. So, you know, if it's just grilling vegetables or doing raw vegetables marinated for 10 minutes with salt, olive oil, and lemon juice, you know, with a lean protein or an egg or something is kind of what I'll do at home as a guiltless kind of dinner. So,
yeah, our chefs are sharing their thoughts, and listeners, you've been sharing yours throughout this hour, and after our only break of the hour, we'll get to some of what the listeners have had to add. We've got Scott Riesenberger from the Lake House in Canandaigua, Sean Wolf from the Big Tree Inn in Geneseo, Candace Dole from the Owl House and Owl House Catering, Andrew Bush from the Union Tavern. Let's get our only break, and what is on your menu, your home menus. We hit that next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, leaders from local nursing homes joining us to talk about how they've been dealing with the pandemic, how it has affected their own internal communities, and what they think should be done going forward to make sure elderly care is safe everywhere in this country. It has been the most vulnerable population during the pandemic. We'll talk to nursing home leaders on Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me read some feedback from listeners. Andrew says, I like a good meal, be it made at home or at a restaurant. And sometimes the best meals are made from simple ingredients following tried and true cooking techniques. I consider myself to be a good cook. I learned how to cook when I was young. I'm now 62, and I could not afford to go out often then. Learning takes time. My recipe book goes back 40 years and includes recipes from mom, friends, and some of my own. It's my go-to book. And my advice? Contact your family and friends for their recipes. Going out? The pros can be great cooks. I only hope their egos don't get in the way, either by their own accord or by others who pour on the adulation, thereby creating a foodie. That said, I do look forward to when this is all said and done and in the rearview mirror, we can all go out to our place of choice. Stay safe, stay positive. That's from Andrew. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate that. And listen, I'm with you. We all are going to enjoy. Oh, my gosh. Can we all just envision the post-vaccine world? I mean, pre-vaccine, we're going to figure some things out. But my gosh, the world's going to feel, it's going to be feel like the just everything is off and we can be running again. Jack emails to say, foodie is a term that whose meaning depends on how it is used. Someone can call someone a foodie as a pejorative term, as in snobbery or elitist, that foodie. But it can also be a joy of food and the gustatory delights to be found not only eating food but preparing them. I do consider myself a foodie, and I revel in it. That's from Jack. I think that's wise. I think that's absolutely on the mark there, Jack. And I've got a bunch of recipes, people just sharing their stuff. So as I pull these up here, I will let me pull those up, and I'll share with our guests some of what I've been doing at home, because I've been struggling in some ways and in ways that I think probably a lot of people do, which is this. I don't want to go to the grocery store more than once every 4 or 6 weeks. And within a couple of weeks, certain things have run out. What I always have a lot of is onions and carrots. And almost everything I cook starts with onions and carrots. I also love cooking with bell pepper. And what I've found is that you can get those big packs. If you cut them into strips, take the seeds out and dry them a bit and then stick them in a big freezer bag, they will cook just fine. Bring them out in strips, let them soften for about 3 minutes, and then you can cook them in a sauté, and they will sort of act as normal. I wouldn't eat them in strips as normal. They get a little sort of wilted, but not wilted like spinach. The issue I have is I also love yams, and yams don't last very long, but yams is kind of like the go-to that breaks up the salt. So I cube up some yams. I sauté some bell pepper, carrots, and onions, add some black beans, and then hit it with some avocado and fresh-cut orange. That's pretty much it. I throw that in a big old taco, and, you know, I can make enough of that stuffing to last a couple of days. It's very filling. It's very good for you. The problem I have is that I don't have ingredients beyond that I feel like last more than a few weeks. I mean, is that just a case, and I'll start with you, Andrew, is that just a case where I'm going to have to go to the public market, or I'm going to have to go, and I know there's Bolton, there's so many other great places that do fresh greens. Last time I brought this up on the show, people deluged me with ideas on where to get fresh greens. I am thrilled that there are options and there are local options. I'm simply saying I'd have to go once a week or once every other week to get them, and I feel like I become a little bit in a rut. Everything I cook, it's pasta with onions and peppers and carrots, or it's chicken with onions and peppers and carrots, or it's this sort of vegan tacos with onions and peppers and carrots, which is great. I love all that stuff. Is there a way to kind of do vegetables in a different direction, Andrew?
There is. It's, you know, you can, you know, dry them out. You can make them like little chips. I mean, I've always gone to the farmer market pretty much weekly, if not a couple times a week, just because I know right now, you know, there's not a lot of people that are there, and I want to support the business that they are there. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having an abundant amount of vegetables. I mean, in this day and age where vegetables are all around utilized in different kinds of recipes and meals, There's nothing wrong with having all that on hand.
Yeah. I know it's sort of it's trite. I'm not complaining. My situation is a fortunate one, so it's not a complaint. It's more just riffing on my own limitations as a chef is what I'm trying to do. So, so I take the point there, Andrew. Candace, you know, I'm thinking more because you're the soup queen. I don't make a lot of soups, though. I did make a mashed potato combined with cubed and mashed celery root, and that was pretty fun. I enjoyed, instead of just mashed potatoes, mashed celery root and mashed potatoes, though I felt like I didn't get the texture right there. How can we change up vegetables a little bit, especially when you don't want to go shopping for a month?
Don't be afraid, especially in this time, of canned vegetables or frozen vegetables. Mm. They're your friend, you know? Sure, fresh is best, but personally, I've been using canned corn. I've been using frozen cauliflower. I'm not an elitist when it comes to that sort of stuff. It's going to keep longer. It's very tasty. Again, I think, you know, you can spice things to make them taste really good. A couple things that'll keep in your pantry for a really long time are lentils, canned beans, pastas, canned tomatoes. And you can also, look to, hard cheeses, like Parmesans. Those will last for a while, too. And there's just so many different things that you can make tasty with those ingredients. You can take your garlic cloves and you can lightly boil them in some oil and you can make a confit that you can keep in your fridge for weeks on end. And when you're going to saute vegetables, you can take out a couple from there and just throw them in the pan. But again, I can't encourage people enough. Don't feel like you're somehow not being a good cook if you're using canned vegetables or frozen vegetables. This is the real world. This is a pandemic. And it's totally okay to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was 3 or 4 weeks in to my last, this was probably in early April. I hadn't been to the store in 3 or 4 weeks. And I just wanted something with a little different flavor. So I roasted garlic and I didn't really have any bread to spread it on. So I just grabbed wheat thins. It was roasted garlic spread on wheat thins. And it was so
good.
It was so good. Sean Wolf, doing vegetables differently at all? Any thoughts there?
Well, for one thing, I agree with Candace about frozen vegetables, especially. Those are, selected at peak season and quickly frozen to preserve their texture and their flavor. I don't think that they're even substitute for fresh vegetables, but I think that, there's certainly some things, especially here when our off season is, 10 months long, we have to lean on those sometimes. Foodies, though, right now, one thing that's very hot among the foodies is fermenting. Really, you can ferment anything. Throw a little salt on it and put it in a jar and see what happens.
Do you like the fermenting trend?
We have done a lot of experimentation and fermented a lot of stuff. There are... I like it, yes, generally.
I was going to say, Senator, you're dodging the question.
Some people go a little far
okay.
With things, and I generally try to avoid things that are super trendy, but it's kind of an area where there's a lot of kind of exploration going on right now, and that really interests me.
All right. Scott Riesenberger, doing vegetables any differently? I think maybe your point about salads and cooking at home, maybe we try too hard to do things differently, but I'm curious to know if you have any thoughts on going a little bit away from the saute carrots, onions, and peppers every night.
Yeah. I mean, vegetables to me are way more complex and interesting than any protein, that you would cook with. I think they have such a versatility in how you can cook them from, pickling to roasting to caramelizing to blanching to keeping raw, but we're all juggling a lot of things at home. If we're homeschooling, we're working from home. I think sometimes there isn't that hour or 2 hours to prepare dinner or prepare lunch. So getting a little more creative with what you could do with this ingredient, or sometimes just keep it super simple. I mean, I'll just roast an entire head of cauliflower in the oven for 45 minutes and let it caramelize on certain edges. And that's dinner, like with a little grated Parmesan, salt, pepper, olive oil. That's like, there's nothing better to me than the simplicity of an ingredient's flavor and enhancing it with fat and salt.
There you go. Sally writes to say, the best move I made was getting a good deep fryer. Anything is good properly fried. I usually went out for that experience in the past. Fry food is rarely good to go. It loses its luscious crispiness, so I miss good French fries. They are not the same baked in the oven. I am now rocking fry nights at my house with all sorts of crispy goodies and homemade sauces. It is easy and fun. That is from Sally. A lot of great recipes people are sharing on our social media pages. Michael says, I'm someone who went out to eat 7 days a week before the lockdown. I've been ordering a lot of voulas, and I came up with a delicious, easy-to-cook meal that's all local. It takes about 15 minutes to prepare. I take cut broccoli, cauliflower, and carrots and steam it in my microwave. I also heat those rice pouches in the microwave and some soy boy smoked tofu. I put it all together in a bowl with some olive oil, ginger, garlic, soy sauce, onion powder, and diced onions. And there's only a bowl and some silverware to clean up. And Candace is indeed the soup queen, and I miss the Owl House brunch on the weekends, Michael says.
Hi, Michael.
Do you recognize that, Michael?
I know that, Michael, very well.
Oh, okay. See, look at this. The big connections family here. I have not met Michael in person, but he's a somewhat frequent emailer. Thank you for that, Michael. And then just a lot of notes shared, you know, again on our social, if you want to check out, especially at Evan Dawson on Twitter. People are jumping in with their thoughts on what to eat and how to prepare it, because we're all, you know, trying to get creative. I think we're going to try to grill out, not this weekend when it snows, because that's horrifying and ridiculous. But before the hour is out, let me ask all of our guests one more question that I want them to weigh in, because Sean kind of touched on this. I'll start with you, Andrew. Do you dig checking out the trends, or do you find yourself more of a classics? I mean, are there trends right now that you like or don't like in the food world that you're seeing, or do you tend to stick to what you've always known?
A little bit of both. I want to keep, like, during the time I'm at home, I'm learning about new trends, seeing what's out there, what's going on, keeping up with everything going on. Because even after this is all done, when I go back to work, I want to utilize those trends in this day and age. But as well, I like to keep with my old, how I cooked back in the day, the grandma way, the old classic way. So pretty much a little bit of both to me.
Okay. Candace?
I think a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B with me. Really what it comes down to is I love cooking because I love eating. So, you know, whatever I'm inspired to make, I'm going to try it at least once. But, yeah, I like the classics, and I like, you know, trends are cool too. Really just what I'm in the mood for and what I personally want to attempt to try to do.
Okay, I'm going to try to goad Sean Wolf into answering a direct question with this one. What is the worst trend out there right now, Sean?
Oof. Oh, God, you put me on the spot. You know, I think we're getting to the end of the farm-to-table trend. And I'm glad for that. Not that I don't like farms, and not that I don't like fresh produce, and not that I don't like local produce. But we're just, the thing with the trends is people bandy about these terms.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they really become meaningless.
So let me just jump in and say, because my heart stopped when you said farm to table. What you're really saying is sort of the appropriation of that term so that everything becomes farm to table and nothing really has much meaning anymore.
Well, all food comes from farms. I mean, it really is. It's meaningless.
This is why you get invited on. You say these pointed, you know, you drop these bombs in conversation. No, but I do take the point. I mean, I'm someone who appreciates as local as we can do it. But there have been really interesting, and the Tampa Bay Times a couple of years ago did an amazing investigation in Florida of the way farm to table is used as a term, and it is meaningless there. There was stuff coming from 2,000 miles away that was called farm to table. So, yeah, I take Sean's point there. Scott Riesenberger. Are you sort of a classics or do you dig the trends?
I mean, I think, you know, you have to have a base in classics, especially professional cooking wise. In terms of trends, I see more trends in ingredients. So, you know, obviously Sean touched on the fermenting trend. You know, there's health aspects to it. There's taste aspects, but cultures have been doing this for you know, thousands of years, and you know, it just becomes a cyclical cycle. You know, every 10 years, the same trend comes back, and it's hot. But food is a great expression of culture, and it's a great expression of palate. So adopting certain trends, if it's cooking with Malaysian ingredients, if that's trendy, or you're cooking, the whole bibimbap kind of pho movement that was happening, you know, you can adopt certain aspects of that and then translate it into your style of cooking. I think when people try and mimic something that they don't understand, maybe the culture or the deep-rooted techniques, then it gets lost in translation. So,
well, I want to thank all of you for hanging out with us this hour, talking about food culture, giving us some cooking ideas. A lot of listeners doing different tacos out there. Turkey tacos, fish tacos, vegan tacos. Tacos very popular in pandemic cooking. Scott Riesenberger at the Lake House in Canandaigua. Sean Wolf at the Big Tree Inn in Geneseo. Candace Dole at the Owl House. Andrew Bush at Union Tavern. Thanks to all of you. And so much of what you do is not just great cooking. It's creating the atmosphere that we can be together in person. And I can't wait till we can do that again. Thanks to all of you for being on the program today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers, guys. Cheers, everyone. I hope you all are cooking something good tonight. Rob Braden, Megan Mack, Evan Dawson. We will talk to you tomorrow.